And when Imam Ali was given the Khilafah by the people, that he was given the Caliphate by the people, we also learn a great many things. It's interesting, but in the words of Imam Ali himself, he says, "My silence in relation to the Caliphate is not motivated by fear of death." Now, just as an aside, of course, Imam Ali, alayhi salam, people said that he was afraid of death, and this is why he did not stand up to fight for his right of caliphate. And so in this context, Imam Ali says, "My silence in relation to the caliphate is not motivated by fear of death. By God, the son of Abu Talib is more fond of death than an infant is to his mother's milk. Rather, my silence is due to what I know about the future. I know if I say something and act accordingly, I know what will happen to Islam. If what I have buried in my chest would come out of my throat, it would come out like the lava of a volcano. You would all become shaken with worries." And so, dear friends, it's interesting. Sometimes, in order to save a bigger cause, we need to remain calm and silent and restrain ourselves. Taking what is ours in anger is never acceptable. And of course, there is a thin line between courage for the sake of Allah and anger for the sake of ourselves. We find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he stayed silent when it came to the issue of the caliphate. He stayed silent in order to save Islam. And it is interesting that this remaining silent was not an easy thing to do for Imam Ali. As he himself says, "If what I have buried in my chest would come out of my throat, it would come out like the lava of a volcano. All would be shaken with worries." Still, for the sake of saving Islam, for the sake of protecting Islam, in a very sensitive point in time, we find that Imam Ali remained patient. He remained silent. He did not stand up to take his right by force. And what is really beautiful is that after the murder of the third caliph, Uthman, we find that the people came in masses to offer the caliphate to Imam Ali. That which was destined for him surely reached him. A profound lesson indeed, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تبكى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
وقتی شخصیت امیرالمومنین رو بشناسه در مقابل او خضوع میکند.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
What does Ali mean? It's one of the names of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also. Al-Aliyyul Azeem. Ali means somebody who has ulu, who is high. If Allah has made him high, nobody can pull him down. They can try whatever they want to do. You know, so when you look at the issue of Ghadir, the ayat which were revealed before it and after it, and even the words of Rasulullah in Ghadir, you know, no serious scholar of Islam, even from the Sunnis, will ever challenge the validity and authenticity of Hadith Ghadir. Of course, what they do is they say, well, you know, it doesn't mean what you understand. That's still acceptable. We can still, you know, discuss with them. But those who say, oh, this didn't happen, I don't believe in it, you know, they are just ignorant. You can't even deal with them. But those, there are many. Anyone who is an alim, worthy of calling, being called an alim and a scholar in Islam, you know, they will never deny this. And so they accept it. Because the hadith of Ghadir is one of the hadith which is of highest level of authenticity, according to Shia and Sunni, science of hadith. And so they accepted that, yes, Rasulullah said that. But they say, well, you know, when Rasulullah said, "Man kuntu mawlahu fahaba aliyun mawla," the word mawla means friend. That whoever is my friend, you know, Ali is also his friend. Or the other way around. And so they try to water down the meaning of the word mawla. And there also, it's a very simple method. If you look at a sentence, you know, somebody has spoken that, you look at the context, what was said before it and after. That is a very, you know, commonsensical way of understanding the speech of anyone. What was the context? And when you look at the context, besides, you know, this issue that he gathered the people, almost more than 100,000 people, those who had gone ahead, they were called back. Those who were still far away, you know, the people had to wait for them to join them. And then the Prophet, you know, in that unusual circumstances, makes this speech, and then he declares what? That whoever is, my friend is also Ali's friend, or whoever is friend I am, Ali is also his friend. It doesn't make sense. If you look at the immediate context there, the first statement of Rasulullah there, when he asked the people, he asked them, "Alastu awla bikum min anfusikum? Am I not, you know, awla to you over yourselves?" And the word awla means to have more authority. To have that wilayat. Wilayat, awlawiyat, you know, means don't I have more authority and right on yourself than yourself? And you will say, well, this is not true. Yeah, it is true. There is an ayat of Quran where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, "An-Nabi is awla than the mu'mini." If he makes the decision of, you know, making a nikah between two individuals without even asking them, he can do that. We can't do that. Maulanas can't do that. But a Nabi can do that. You know, they have that wilayah. Means they have, they guard the authority over us more than what we have. And so Rasulullah asked this question, أَلَسْتُ أَوْلَى بِكُم مِّنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ? Do not I have more authority on you than yourselves? And the entire audience of thousands of people, they responded by saying, Bala ya Rasulullah. That yes, ya Rasulullah, you have more authority on us than ourselves. And after making that declaration, asking this question and getting the confession from them, that's where the Prophet raises the hands of Ali and he says, فَمَنْ كُنْتُ مَوْلَاهُ فَحَاذَ عَلِيٌّ مَوْلَاهُ.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Venezuela, a large number of musicians are striving for one common goal, and that's setting the Guinness record as the world's largest orchestra. Over 12,000 musicians, mostly children and adolescents, have played together to make that happen. Hundreds of violins, violas, and double basses playing in unison at this setting in Caracas. The musicians are all connected to the country's network of youth orchestras. For them to set a record, over 8,000 instruments had to play at the same time during a 5-minute period of a classical piece. Right now, a Russian orchestra that played the country's national anthem is holding the record. Once done, the crowd of musicians erupted in cheers, lifting their instruments and waving Venezuelan flags. Guinness will announce its decision in the next 10 days. Tourists and residents in Los Angeles have been mesmerized by a dazzling new event the U.S. city is hosting, with holiday-themed and full of colorful lights. Visitors can enjoy a mile-long walkway covered on all sides with brightly lit installations. Artists from around the world have taken part in the exhibition. The centerpiece display is a cathedral tunnel lit with thousands of bulbs. Another amazing attraction is the orbs, lit up with thousands of torches. The event has been a huge hit with the LA public.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice.
And it gets to be out in the open, and it's like a perfect night to do it, so it's great.
It's definitely the best. Like, we had to do, like, in a car to go see lights, and then we got to, like, now, like, go around and actually walk and get to see everything up close, which is super nice.
Yeah.
Definitely after the, year and a half that we've had.
Yeah.
So.
And it's really nice to see everything up close, because it's, like, you see in a photo, but then it's more real, so.
Yeah.
The event opened to the public on the 12th of November and will run for 5 nights. Preparations for the event, however, started a month ago. The organizers say millions of bulbs and 17 miles of cables are used for the 18 art installations.
Paleontologists in Brazil have discovered remains that could belong to a species of dinosaur as yet unknown. The fossils were found at a site in northeastern Brazil. A team of scientists is trying to put together the bones and complete the huge dinosaur's skeleton. They think it lived during the Cretaceous period, which began around 145 million years ago and ended with extinction of all dinosaurs roughly 66 million years ago. From a gray and gloomy look to a cheery and colorful appearance. That's a story of how a neighborhood in Peru's capital, Lima, is being transformed to become a tourist attraction. A group of artists in Lima are bringing color and joy to this hilly neighborhood by painting the walls of houses. Creating an optical illusion of a giant mural, the project is visible from different spots across the city. The designers are hoping what they did can improve the lives of residents in a neighborhood that was considered to be unsafe before.
What we are doing here is communal work with all the neighbors, and we are doing it because it's important to change the environment through the use of colors. This hill was considered an unsafe and dangerous area of the city, so we decided to change that social stigma through art, which, for me as a muralist, is the best tool to achieve it.
The project was started 5 months ago, and workers are now putting the final touches to their work of art. The mural covers over 300,000 square meters. It's the largest in South America.
The birth of a baby sloth at an uncharacteristically hasty speed has surprised London zookeepers. A tiny two-toed sloth named Terry was born to a mother, Marilyn, at the weekend. The zookeepers say there was no sign at all that Marilyn was going into labor when they checked her in the morning. However, less than an hour, they spotted something like a tiny arm tucked into her tummy. Marilyn had quietly delivered the baby with no fuss at all, while her keepers were chopping up sweet potatoes for her breakfast. The mother and baby are said to be doing well, but the zookeepers still don't know the sex of the baby.
Modern technology has changed our lives in countless ways, with robots now preparing to lend a hand in operation rooms. Surgical robots are on display at the 4th China International Import Expo. One of the machines, dubbed Mesa X, gives assistance in spinal surgery. Employing the robot can lessen bleeding by 50% compared to open surgeries. Another one assists doctors to perform interventional surgeries.
Guide valves in the vessels can be controlled even less than 1 millimeter. This is not cannot be achieved by the human hands. With the great market impact from this showcase, we successfully performed a first case PCI in Hainan Boao on March 13th.
The producers say surgical robots will soon operate in more hospitals around China. Therefore, training centers have been established to help surgeons learn how to operate the new generation of surgical robots.
A tigress belonging to the endangered Bengal species has given birth to four cubs at the Mexican Zoo, bringing joy and hope to wildlife enthusiasts. The four were born in the San Jorge Park in the city of Ciudad Juarez on October 10th. Nearly a month on, they are in good health. That is good news, because usually when multiple cubs are born, not all of them survive. Zoo officials have not yet determined the sex of the newborn cubs. That is because their mother lets out a roar when the vets are nearby. Bengal tigers are endangered for two reasons: poaching and the destruction of their natural habitat. Here's what you can call killing two birds with one stone. classic car lovers have gone on an exciting rally to see an erupting volcano. The event organized by Beshbuk Rallies happened on a Saturday. Motorists taking part in the vintage rally had the unique opportunity to witness a volcano erupting ash and smoke. Most of the participants tried to get as close as they could to the volcano, but there were also those who chose to take other vehicles because they were afraid that their precious antique cars would be damaged.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Workers digging gas pipes in the Peruvian capital Lima have discovered a cemetery dating back to millennia. Archaeologists have recovered six bodies, including those of children. All of them were buried in a seated position. The site also yielded about 40 burial vessels. The findings are thought to belong to the culture known as White on Red, which settled on the central coast of Peru centuries ago during the pre-Hispanic era.
Often, it does not take much to bring about positive social change. In Johannesburg, a group of painters are creating artworks on the trolleys of street recyclers. Reason? To encourage bystanders to look up and notice the work recyclers, locally known as reclaimers, do in the community.
I like my work to have meaning, so when I get to paint and become a part of a project like this, it's great for me, you know, because it's not every day we get to, like, do stuff like this, so, yeah.
Up until now, they were just filthy-looking jumbo bags with recyclable waste wheeling along the streets. But thanks to graffiti artists who are giving them a makeover with bold and bright designs to help identify and protect the recyclers, artists say their goal is to build a relationship between neighborhood residents and waste pickers. The reclaimers roam around the city day and night, with some motorists even considering them a risk, as the trolleys are not always visible. There are some 6,000 reclaimers in Johannesburg who make a living collecting, sorting, recycling garbage. It's a messy job, but they do it anyway. A group of women are joining hands to protect one of India's key natural sites that is also on UNESCO's heritage list, the Western Ghats, a mountain chain that's facing severe deforestation. The 27 members of this all-female task force are doing all they can to protect the area's rare ferns, mosses, and thousands of other plants. They're using a variety of gardening tools and techniques to preserve species from all over the mountains. Not only that, but they also make artificial conditions and habitats for endangered species from other parts of the world, mainly those affected by climate change. One of the conservationists explained that what they are doing is actually helping the forest regenerate.
We have witnessed the birth of a forest, and that's a very powerful thing. You know, the mind is filled with the ghastly stories of forests being cut, like the Amazon or like the Western Ghats, but here we're witness to the birth of forests as well, and that is the forest itself birthing itself, you see.
The Western Ghats Mountains are home to nearly 5,000 species of flowering plants, but many of them are globally threatened. Only less than half of the area's flora is currently under conservation. Scientists say the outlook for the mountain is very concerning. Carbon dioxide is one of the causes of global warming, but can we get rid of it to save our planet? A Swiss firm has come up with a novel idea to store CO2 underground and turn it into rocks. Company Climeworks has started operating the world's largest direct air carbon capture and storage plant called Okra in Iceland. Located in Hershey, Okra is entirely run on renewable energy. It sucks carbon dioxide directly from the air and buries it as rocks deep underground to be mineralized. Usually, a natural process takes hundreds of thousands of years to turn the gas into basaltic rocks. But here, it takes up to 2 years for the CO2 to turn into white crystals.
Once the carbon dioxide is captured, it will be dissolved in water, and here we are at the injection site. The carbon dioxide dissolved in water will come through this pipe into the well, where it will be injected into the volcanic rock at a depth of between 800 meters and 2 kilometers.
The plant is said to be removing 4,000 tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere each year. The amount is too little to save the planet from carbon emissions, as climate modeling suggests the world needs to eliminate several billion tons per year by 2050. Here we have to take into account the saying of the head of Orca that we have to learn to walk before we can run. Legends never die. So 1 year after his death, Argentinians are remembering their hero on his birthday. And that's no one but the legendary football player Diego Maradona. It would have been Maradona's 61st birthday this year. People all around the country, including in the capital Buenos Aires, remembered their iconic figure in ceremonies over the weekend. In the city of Rosario, a giant monument was inaugurated in honor of the football star. You can see on your screens fans gathering there in celebration. They say Maradona's love still runs in the veins of Argentinians. One of the disastrous effects of climate change has been the loss of glaciers worldwide. People around the world are trying new ways to tackle this problem. Now, a team of Chilean conservationists have come up with a creative project to protect glaciers and prevent water loss. The project is called Nilus. Winter rains are collected in cone-like structures called stupas. Experts from Chile are using a technology that was first developed in India to make these man-made glaciers. The water is then later used in the dry summer months. Chile has been experiencing a severe drought for years. Nilus director Enrique Gilona says the project hopes to address water shortages in the country.
Here we are not creating new water. Water is something that is in nature already. It has a cycle, but clearly it has been affected by the effects of the great climate change, which we are facing. And we are looking for a solution that actually allows us to protect this water for a longer time in the mountain range, to be able to deliver it downstream toward the communities.
The goal is to store some 100 million liters of water across 50 stupas next year. This would be enough water to supply 100,000 people for 3 months. The first prototype was erected in park arenas, an area known for its glaciers surrounding a volcano, the highest parts of the mountain region. Researchers and activists have warned that glaciers in the Andes Mountains have been receding in recent years. They blame climate change for the loss of glaciers and water shortages.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws. If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. دين الإسلام ديني والعظم غير ديني محمد اللي هديني. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Going to talk about the unlawful gains according to Ayatollah Khamenei. Let's take a listen to a short biography and we'll be back.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching Makassas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Sheikh Javid, let me start off this episode with this interesting question. Is it permissible to work in cremating non-Muslim dead bodies and get paid for the work, according to Ayatollah Khamenei? What's the ruling?
Well, cremating the dead body of non-Muslims is not haram, you know. Mm-hmm. Though we do not believe that we do not believe in cremation. Cremation has nothing to do with Islam. But as a Muslim worker, of course, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, there is no objection to someone cremating the dead body of a non-Muslim. So, and of course, Ayatollah Khamenei says that there is no objection to someone embarking on such work or getting paid for it. You know, the pay is halal and there is no problem.
I see. How about this scenario, Sheikh Javid? What's Ayatollah Khamenei's ruling or fatwa on this? Is it permissible for a person who can manage to earn a living with his own effort?
Yeah.
To request others for help or to live off them like a freeloader?
Well, it is not good, you know, to live off on someone. To live off someone.
Yes.
And is highly discouraged because you are feeding on someone else and you are actually depending squarely on someone else while you have the energy and you have the ability to work and have your own source of income. You leave off other people. That's not haram, you know, according to Ayatollah.
But it's reprehensible?
It is reprehensible, of course, you know. Ayatollah Khamenei says that it's not good, you know, la yanbaghi. It's not good for someone to do so.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, is it permissible for women to earn a living of trading in jewelry in a jewelry market?
Of course, there's no problem in that as well. As long as, you know, Shari limits are observed, it's permissible, quite permissible for women to, you know, to sell jewelry, to trade in jewelry, and of course, you know, provided that the Shari limits or the Shari rules are observed. You know, women who sell such things, they have to, let's say, while in the market, while selling these things in public places, women have to observe hijab and they should not interact with men, laugh or joke with men. And these are the Shari limits which must be observed while trading in jewelry, while selling such items on the market.
Mm-hmm, I see. What is the ruling on working in decorating buildings, especially when the place destined for such a makeover could be used for committing haram or unlawful acts such as worshipping idols? And is it also permissible to build a hall which may eventually be used for dancing and the like?
I think I did mention in one of the my answers to one of your questions in one of the previous episodes that it's not permissible to involve in any of these activities. You know, if one is certain that, for example, a hall is going to be used for dancing or as a nightclub or as let's say as a casino, of course, it's not permissible. And Ayatollah Khamenei says that there is no problem in decoration in and of itself,
mm-hmm.
unless one knows that the decorated places will be used for committing haram acts.
I see.
You know? If you know for sure that it's going to be used for haram acts, you are not permissible. It's not permissible for you to decorate that building, to make it beautiful, of course. But if you have no knowledge, no idea of whether that place is going to be used for haram purposes or not, there is no problem. And Ayatollah Khamenei goes on saying that it's not permissible, according to Islam, to decorate a room specified for worshipping idols. Mm-hmm. Okay, e.g., for example, to set it its furniture and to determine the place of idols. You know, to arrange the things in the place in that special room where the idol worshipping takes place. So it's not permissible to get involved in arranging the chairs or putting. Setting up the idols and doing any activities. So, and also,
What if that some of these activities are done like independently, like it's those centers are not specifically specified or destined for idol worshiping. Like there are some other activities that are going on, including idol mm-hmm. worshiping.
You know, just I give you the example of a wedding hall, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A wedding hall is a place where people may want to use as a place for dancing, okay?
Yes.
On a wedding day. But wedding in and of itself is not haram. You see, it's also recommended to some extent to have your wedding,
mm-hmm.
to give walima or to give a feast to people, okay?
Yes.
And the reception takes place on the wedding day, especially.
Yes.
Even those sins sometimes do take place in the wedding hall with some people dancing, listening to music, haram music, of course, but it's still not haram for a person to decorate that wedding hall, to prepare it, to set up the chairs, and to do any other activities related to that,
okay.
To reception, of course.
Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a break because we are up for that, and we'll be back continuing these unlawful gains.
La ilaha illallah, Allahu Akbar.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Sheikh Javid, we are still talking about the Islamic unlawful or Islamically unlawful gains according to Ayatollah Khamenei, and I asked you a question regarding working in a decorating buildings, you know, or in the business, for example, like as you said, like preparing, for example, a hall or building a hall which may be used for other purposes, like dancing, as you said, all right?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask you a very quick question regarding dancing. Is dancing unlawful among the same-sex people, like at a wedding, for example, women dancing for women, not mixed dancing?
Obviously, all religious authorities are of the view that it's not permissible for a woman to dance in public gatherings and parties, let's mm-hmm. say, regardless of whether the participants are male or female, you know, members. It's not permissible. Of course, in there's only one situation or one scenario in which, for example, a woman can dance, and that is a woman wants to dance for her husband,
mm-hmm.
and if her husband requests her to dance for her, of course she can dance. She can dance for her, and dancing is allowed provided that there is no haram music or vulgar music involved, mm-hmm. or let's say licentious music involved, because that can make that definitely makes the dancing and also the dancing haram, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also, you see, when something halal becomes accompanied by haram thing, then both the activities become haram. Just like dancing, when it is accompanied by haram music, then the dancing for husband also becomes haram. Because,
I see.
Okay, because some people say, I cannot feel like dancing unless I listen to music.
Mm-hmm.
That's not permissible.
How about dancing of the men in the company of other men?
Of course, it's not permissible.
And no haram music is
you know,
played.
I think many people would say that it's not possible to dance in front of men when there is no music,
mm-hmm.
Okay, or when there is no sound being played. Of course, irrespective of whether there is music being played
or
not,
yes,
dancing in front of other men is also not permissible.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tahrani.
علی علیه السلام فرماید ثم جعل فی یدک مفاتیح خزائنه.
امام علی علیه السلام in a beautiful tradition states, Allah has put the keys to his treasures in your hands. But how? By allowing you to request from him.
فمتا شئت استفتحت بالدعاء ابواب خزائنه.
Whenever you wish, you open his chamber of divine treasures and take whatever you like. Please pay attention. You don't wait for Allah to go and bring you His treasures. No, Allah Himself will give you the keys to His divine treasures. You and I had wrong thoughts about Allah.
راجب خدا بد فکر کردی شما و منم همچنین مثل شما.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, where we listen to a speech by Ayatollah Agha Mujtaba Tehrani. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. Oh, 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 oh,
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, my dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Salaamu Alaikum. Thank you all very much for joining us. This is a special program on the occasion of the demise or the martyrdom of Lady Fatima Masuma, peace be upon her. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, whether it's a demise or a martyrdom later on in the program, inshallah. But before that, I would like to introduce to you the honorable guest of our program, my favorite guest, Dr. Abbas Ali Shamili, my beloved father. Salaamu Alaikum and thank you for joining us.
Alaikum Assalam wa Rahmatullah wa Barakatuh. I need to express my salams and greetings to all brothers and sisters who are listening in this program. First of all, we need to show our sadness and condolences for the occasion of martyrdom of Lady Fatima Masuma Salamullah Ta'ala Alayha, whom we are dwelling in her shrine nowadays for years, taking benefits.
Thank you very much. For our dear audience who are not familiar with Dr. Shamili, I would like to give you a very brief introduction. Dr. Shamili has studied in the Islamic Seminary in Qom for over 30 years. He's been teaching here for the past 20 years. He has a PhD in Culture and Values in Education from McGill University, Canada. And at the moment, he's a staff member of Al Mustafa International University. So, Dr. Shamili, let's start with the very name of Masuma, which means the infallible. And as I know, this is the only non-infallible who has been given this title, Masuma, or infallible, by an imam who is himself an infallible. So this says something about her status. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, please?
Actually, Imam Musa ibn Ja'far salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi emphasized to name all his daughters as Fatima. Mm-hmm. And according to the historical documents, he came with four Fatimiyat. Fatima al-Kubra, who is Fatima Masuma, Lady Masuma in Qom. Mm-hmm. Fatima Sughra in Azerbaijan. Fatima Wusta in northern part of Iran. And Fatima Ukhra in Isfahan. So he had four. Of course, he may had more, but we have documents about four Fatima. Among them, Lady Masuma was very outstanding because of her spiritual, intellectual, and divine characteristics she enjoyed. The best characteristics of Fatima Masuma, as you mentioned, was Masuma, infallible, sinlessness. The one who enjoys sinlessness. And this title was given, gifted to her by her brother Imam Ali al-Musa al-Ridha salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi, because of her dedication and commitment, total dedication and commitment to the laws and regulations, to worshipping Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and also to defense with regard to the belief system of Shia ideas and belief system.
Right. So moving on to the next part and our next question, we know that Lady Fatima Masuma and Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha, our eighth imam, our eighth infallible imam, are brother and sister. They are actually from one mother, so they are direct or whole brother and sister. And we have in the narrations, if I'm not wrong, from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, that whoever visits my aunt in Qom is like he has visited me. So this says a lot. I mean, like when an infallible imam not only that she gets a title of Ma'suma, the infallible, by an infallible imam, but that she is said to that her ziyara is said to have the same reward or thawab as visiting an infallible imam. So a little bit on that, please.
You mentioned, the only title of Ma'suma is given to Fatima Ma'suma, neither to Zainab Kubra, neither to Khadija, neither to any other. But Lady Fatima Ma'suma, the daughter of Musa ibn Ja'far salawatullahi wa salamuhu alayhi.
Right.
But the narration that you mentioned with regard from Imam Sadiq, it's not from Imam Sadiq. Mm. It's from Imam Ali al-Ridha, mm-hmm. salawatullahi wa salamuhu
alayhi. From her brother again.
Man zara ma'suma biqom keman zarani. Those who visit Fatima Ma'suma in Qom exactly resembles to visiting my shrine in Tus. So it shows the high status of Fatima Ma'suma before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because when infallible imam provides such a statement, it shows that he is providing us a fact. And this is because of her special status before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's amazing that intercession of all Shia is gifted to Lady Fatima Masuma salawatullahi wa salamuhu alayha from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in according to a riwayah from Imam Sadiq.
Mm-hmm.
And this is because of her dedication, her knowledge, her support, and her defense with regard to the infallible imam, the position of the institution of imamate. It's very important that as well as that reward and thawab, it is said that those who visit the shrine of Fatima Ma'suma is exactly as those who visit the shrine of Imam Ali al-Ridha. Why? Because the same in terms of everything,
mm-hmm.
spirituality, dedication, commitment, infallibility. And it's not the, you know, matter of description that, you know, a brother wants to provide a description from his sister. And interestingly, Fatima Ma'suma is also entitled as Muhaditha, one of the greatest narrators,
mm-hmm.
with regard to the belief system, particularly with regard to the establishment of imamate, is Lady Fatima Ma'suma. You know, unlike Fatima al-Zahra salawatullahi wa salamuhu alayha, which is not only Muhaditha, but she was also Muhaditha. She was spoken to by Gabriel. So she enjoyed the title of Muhaditha, but Lady Ma'suma is just Muhaditha.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Thank you very much. My dear friends, today is the demise anniversary of Lady Fatima Masuma. This is a special program with the name The Ship of Salvation. On this occasion, we try our best to cover the main parts of her life as much as we can in the short time that we have. I would like to express my sincere condolences.